Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And for the second Friday in a row, we don't begin, as usual on Fridays, with our weekly Ask the Mayor segment. The mayor has called in sick. Now, last Friday, he couldn't make it, and basically no New York Democrat could have made it because last Friday at this time was the funeral for Denny Farrell, who died after a long and meaningful life as a politician from Harlem in the state legislature and in statewide Democratic politics. And today, we are told by the mayor's office that he's just sick. So what can we say? People get sick. Both my kids had strep this year. People get sick. Now the mayor's got whatever he's got. A reporter from here tells me at an event yesterday he did not look well, so he didn't feel up to going on the radio this morning. So, Mr. Mayor, if you're listening, we just hope you feel better. And I know a diner up by me in Washington Heights that makes a great chicken soup, though I don't know if they deliver to Gracie Mansion. So instead, we'll talk about yet another shocking death this morning. I don't even know if you've heard this yet, because it just broke a couple of hours ago. Another suicide, according to the reporting, this time of the celebrity chef Anthony Bourdain. He came to prominence outside the restaurant walls with his book Kitchen Confidential back in 2000. In recent years, he had hosted Parts Unknown, a food and travel show on CNN, for which he won a Peabody Award in 2013. Anthony Bourdain was 61. And of course, this follows the death by suicide of Kate Spade at 55 earlier this week. And these celebrity suicides come just as the Centers for Disease Control came out with a report just yesterday showing that suicide rates in general in this country have increased by 25% in the last two decades. So we honor the memories of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain now by talking about the larger problem and what it says about psychology or external conditions in the United States of America these days. With me now are two guests who returned to the show for this and on very short notice this morning, and we thank them very much for doing so. Jennifer Michael Hecht, author of the book Stay, A History of Suicide and the Philosophies Against It, and Mary Buser, co-founder of the Samaritans of New York Suicide Prevention Hotline and author of Lockdown on Rikers, Shocking Stories of Abuse and Injustice at New York's Notorious Jail. She had also been assistant unit chief in the mental health department at Rikers from 1995 to 2000 before founding the Samaritans of New York Suicide Prevention Hotline. So Mary and Jennifer, welcome back to WNYC, and I'm sorry it's under these circumstances.
Yeah, thank you.
Glad to be here.
And first on Anthony Bourdain, since that's the breaking and shocking news this morning. Jennifer, I gather you knew him, so I'm so sorry for your loss personally as well.
Yeah, I'm very much in shock about. I mean, we were very close, like 20 years ago. Not much in touch after he got so famous, but it's kind of staggering. We were very close.
Not much in touch recently, but did you have any idea that this might come for him?
No. I mean, we all liked to party a lot back then, and we all felt, we were all kind of struggling financially and our careers, and so it was a dark little crowd, but gee, Tony has come to be this sort of icon of enjoying life, of the fantasy of what we would do if we could, right? Travel and eat and to arrive in these places already famous and loved. It's really hard for me to process this.
Yeah.
And I have to start speaking out about the fact that children under 13, when one of their parents take their lives, they do not do very well. I withhold this usually because I'm asked to speak right after something like this happens, and I don't want to say anything that looks like I'm saying something about a particular person being in danger. But look, folks, you have got to look into the numbers and see that you are needed way more than you realize. And if you have kids under 18 in the house, they need you so badly. It doesn't matter how terrible a father you may think you are, or it, none of that matters. It matters that you stay for them. And I can't hold that back anymore. This is beginning to be too much of a wave.
Well, that's a good place to start, because that's what really matters, is preventing the pain of people, not to mention the deaths of people, but also the pain of the people they left behind for the future. That's why we would bother to talk about these individual cases on this show. Mary, anything you want to add right off the bat on what Jennifer just said?
Well, I think that the fact that Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain committed suicide, despite families and their success, et cetera, really speaks to the excruciating state that they must have been in and probably were for some time. I can't imagine that they weren't thinking about the impact that this would have, but I think it just speaks to how, I would suspect depression in both cases, just how devastating it is and how consuming it is. I think they were obviously in a very bad state of mind.
Agree. Yeah. I entirely agree. I just want to say that because of my book, I get letters from people who said when they saw the numbers, it took suicide off the table. And not only were they glad to have that, but that it stopped the ideation. And I've had suicidal ideation. I know that it can be torturous. And to have worked out in your mind that that's not where you're going to go does help some people.
You mentioned Jennifer, and you know what? I'm going to just give out the phone number right now and invite people in on a few things. You can remember Anthony Bourdain or Kate Spade if their work was meaningful to you, or if you knew them personally. I know that everyone we know at CNN here in New York is in shock this morning. He had really become a part of that network. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, and you can ask our guests for advice if someone you know has considered suicide. Loved ones are so often left wondering, is there anything more that I could have done? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I should say that this is a radio show, not a suicide hotline, and there's only a limited amount that we could do for people who may be getting triggered personally by these celebrity suicides. But our guest, Mary, has run a suicide prevention hotline, and Jennifer has counseled people individually, I gather, or people have taken inspiration from their book not to take their own lives. And Mary, at very least, could refer you out. I'm also going to give out a phone number right now for the Samaritans, her group, which is 212-673-3000, 212-673-3000, just to be as responsible as I think we have a responsibility to be as we talk about this topic and in so immediate and salient a way with Mary Buser and Jennifer Michael Hecht. Mary, tell us about your work with the Samaritans of New York Suicide Prevention Hotline.
Yes. And I think this is very important at this juncture because we're seeing an increase in suicide across the country. And it's becoming apparent to me more and more that everyday people are really the ones on the front lines and need to know kind of what to do, how to approach someone that they think might be suicidal. And I think the Samaritans is a very good example of that, because the premise was to take everyday people. It is everyday people who staff the hotline, and they underwent a six-week training to talk to people who are feeling suicidal, who are in crisis. And they're not going to solve someone's problems long-term. A referral usually follows if someone wants it. But in those critical moments, ordinary people can make a very, very big difference. And, you know, I could say that if you think that someone close to you you're concerned about, the first thing you would need to do is ask them how they're feeling. Open-ended. Don't say, you're doing okay. Ask a person, hey, you seem a little withdrawn, whatever. Open. Invite a dialogue. Get it out there. Listen. Listen to what someone has to say without judgment, without saying to someone it'll be better tomorrow, other people have it worse than you. Just listen. And that can be a tremendous tonic for people in that moment. I would have to say the next thing to do, and it sounds like it's a little bit tough, but is to ask, do you ever feel so bad you think of killing yourself? And believe it or not, you're not going to put the idea into somebody's head, but if you put it out there for them, it can be a big relief for them to say yes. It doesn't mean they're going to die tomorrow, or they'll say no, but now you know. And it is very important.
And what do you do then?
Okay, very good question. The next step, and you take it one step further, and again, at the Samaritans, you would go through a lot of training and role-playing on this, but then if they say yes, you're going to say, have you thought about how? And that sounds like a tough thing to ask, but you need to, because they may say to you, I have access, I have a gun, in my hunting lodge, or they may say, I know someone where I could get pills. You're going to immediately get a sense of what you're dealing with, and it's important to know that.
You mean if they get very specific about how they're considering it, then it means they're more serious?
Yeah. It depends on what their answer is. If they say, I have a cousin who's a pharmacist who could get me, if something's very, theoretical, then that tells you one thing. If they say they have access to a loaded gun, that's another thing. And you need to know what you're dealing with.
Jennifer, what did you want to add?
Well, I guess I take it from a slightly different perspective from most, in that I'm really speaking to people about taking care of themselves. I think the fact that people call in these hotlines and that it helps so much shows that a lot of people who are feeling ideational, feeling like thinking about suicide a lot, they don't want to die. They're still trying not to. And the hotline is the one way that they feel like they don't compromise their status in the world.
Right.
And so they're able to reach out a little bit. I really think we have to start realizing that we're not only talking to the people who are fine and telling them to look out for other people. In my casual conversations, I find that, because of my work, most people by a lot think about it now and again, whether they think about it actively or whether it flashes through their mind. It's probably the same rate of people thinking homicidal thoughts when they're driving on the freeway. It goes through people's minds. And it's important to know that those thoughts don't mean you are being led in this direction. It's important to know that mental health is, by definition, an issue in this, but a lot of people, more than half of students in colleges, a big survey showed more than half of the students in colleges who took their lives had never stepped foot into the mental health place. Now, obviously,
Jennifer, maybe this is also about stigma, but one of the stats that came out yesterday from the Centers for Disease Control, as they were revealing this 25% increase in suicide nationally over the last two decades, that a majority, 54%, did not have a known mental health history.
Right, and only 5% of not that this was in the same study, but I was recently looking at something that said only 5% of depressed people go on to take their lives. So there is not a one-to-one correlation here. People, look, just I'm asking your audience to just say, I won't make that decision when I'm inebriated. If you just ask yourself not to do that, if you just say to yourself, maybe if you could find one person in your life who would agree with you that you've had enough, you're in a different category, we can talk about it. But a lot of people go forward with this knowing that no one they know, no doctor, and not even themselves in another mood would appreciate this gesture as anything other than tragic. And really, I find that just walking through these ideas is, you know, most people who go to a suicide bridge and find a barrier, they don't go to another bridge. They go home. This impulse doesn't last that long. And if you make it so your guns are just in your neighbor's house, just the effort of going over there makes a difference. And maybe you have to see a human being, and you don't do it. In England in the 90s, the acetaminophen suicide, which is a horrible way to do it. It hurts like hell. But people were...
Acetaminophen, like too much Tylenol?
That is correct. They saw it all on a TV show and started copying it. And so the government passed laws that you could only sell it in bubble wrap and in fewer number of pills than would kill you. And the suicide rate went down. That's real numbers, not that they went to some other method. There was nothing in the house that would kill them, and so they went to sleep instead. It's not always that simple, but method is a big thing, and this country is in trouble in part because we have so many guns.
Right.
Listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the shocking news this morning that celebrity chef and CNN Parts Unknown host Anthony Bourdain has died by suicide, taking his own life in a hotel room in Paris, apparently, at the age of 61. And, of course, this comes just days after Kate Spade took her own life at the age of 55. And with these two celebrity deaths in the news, we're taking the opportunity to talk about how to prevent yourself or someone you know, if they are on the verge of making that decision,
I'll add that for young people, Avicii's death last month was as big a deal as these are for the older generation.
And my guests are Jennifer Michael Hecht, author of the book Stay, A History of Suicide and the Philosophies Against It, and Mary Buser, co-founder of the Samaritans of New York Suicide Prevention Hotline. And Fritz in Jamaica, Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, Fritz.
Hello. Thank you very much. I have four things I want to say about Anthony Bourdain. I knew him briefly when I taught him French one-on-one at Berlitz near Rockefeller Center. Second point, he gave me one of his books about his experience with cuisine, but I didn't quite... So I gave that book to my nephew, Alain, who is a chef with Emeril. Third point, I was impressed with Anthony Bourdain, how relaxed he was. He would come to class with sandals, and he, right away, you know, I felt at ease with him, as if I knew him for a long time. Finally, Anthony Bourdain impressed me when I saw him on his shows, CNN shows. He would meet anybody in the world. And the guy was, you know, it's like he was from that culture. I envy him, especially these days.
And thank you so much for that eulogy. And how ironic, and again, listeners, for those of you just joining us, our guest Jennifer Michael Heck did know Anthony Bourdain personally. They were close decades ago and not so much in touch recently. But here's, you know, the caller, through remembering what he admired about Anthony Bourdain and the personal contact that he had with him, reminds us that even somebody who the general public might envy might wind up taking this act. And Jennifer, he was found in his hotel room in Paris by his friend and renowned French chef, Eric Rippert, I guess is how you say it. Do we learn from that, that people can make this decision anytime, anywhere, at home or on the road or whatever?
Well, yeah, and the case of Kate Spade was particularly heartbreaking because she had spoken to family members on the phone that night and was planning a trip. I don't think she was obfuscating. I think at that moment she wanted to live and thought she was going to live. I shouldn't be opining on this, but the point is, boy, it's just for most people out there, the alcohol question is I'm afraid very large, because it changes mood so quickly. And that's again why you're the one person who is listening out there. You're the one who can save your life. And if this is what you want to do, if you want to save your life, write it down in your own handwriting that you want to struggle through, and do the things you need to get courage. But I think also that these people were all rich and successful and creative, but one thing that they couldn't do was live down shame in some of the ways that this culture knows how to. And we're terrible at managing shame. We just have passed out of the religious version and not into a new way of dealing with it. And people who write a recovery novel or something like that are able to air the agony and tell people their worst moments and get a laugh and move on. Mm. But if you're very famous for being happy, it's really hard to make the choice to tell everyone that that's changed.
Mary?
Yeah, I would just like to say, if you are concerned about someone, and I think that Jennifer's point about the guns is very important, remove access. Get it away from people. People can, a gunshot is very immediate. It's just the pull of a trigger, and it's so easy. And again, if it can be delayed, these thoughts can be delayed. If talking to a hotline, starting to get some help, most people are going to improve. There is hope. Remove obvious things. When I worked at Rikers Island in the mental observation unit, we went around and we looked at any fixture that could be used for a hanging, removed it. Mm-hmm. Take those things away at the very least. And I think it's also good for people. We're all affected. I didn't know Anthony Bourdain. I didn't know Kate Spade. But I'm affected by it. We all are. And if you are feeling fragile right now, please know that this is not the way that it has to be, that there is hope. And hope is essential, that right now things might be a little dark, but around the bend the skies can brighten, and hang in there, because many more people who feel this badly don't take their lives, and you want to be one of them.
Let me take another call. Julie in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Julie.
Hi. I also wanted to make note, my son lost his father to suicide 2 years ago, and my son is now 13 years old, and he also has Asperger's, so these two factors put him at a higher risk. And I have found in my journey with some of his own suicidal ideations that it is so difficult in this country to get adequate care, and I feel that we treat mental health much differently than we treat our physical health, and until we make the connection that the two are related and we should tackle mental health with the same temerity that we treat cancers, I just don't know how we're going to move forward as far as covering people so they have access. Now, Anthony Bourdain, obviously, and Kate Spade had the means to reach and get help if they so sought it out, but even when you're looking for help, it is so difficult to find appropriate care in this country.
Julie, thank you very much for that. By the way, one correction, I said Paris. Anthony Bourdain was found in Strasbourg, not Paris. Jennifer, to the point that the caller was making about mental health, we have another tweet that says, I wonder about the suicide rates in countries that have better national health care. Do either of you have, Jennifer, you first, if you have anything on this?
Well, it's tricky because in Scandinavia, the suicide rates have been bad for a long time, as has the alcoholism, and they have pretty good mental health, wonderful mental health care in some cases, but certainly very socialized medicine. So, yeah, but that's a very dark place. I mean, I've been there in the winter. The sun doesn't really come up, and it has its own problems. So We do have to sort of look around, but in most cases, yeah, if people can get help, it helps tremendously. And it doesn't even really matter that much what kind. What matters most is a caring person and the relationship that forms there. And I know it's hard to get, but if you work hard, you can usually get some.
Yeah, I agree with that. Call a hotline. You need an instant connection with a caring person. And suicide has come a long way in terms of the stigma attached to it, but it's still there. And that barrier needs to continue to come down. I think that's something very important that keeps people isolated and fearful of talking about it. So if you can call a hotline or talk to someone, it's very hard, as that caller said, to find someone who you can really connect to, but it makes all the difference when you do.
And again, we'll share those numbers. Mary's group, the Samaritans of New York, their suicide prevention hotline is 212-673-3000, 212-673-3000. There's also the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, which is 800-273-8255, 800-273-8255 for the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. Mary, the Centers for Disease Control report that came out yesterday cites a nationwide rise in suicides of 25% in the last two decades, as I said, and they find some variability by states and other demographics. Middle-aged adults saw the biggest rise over the last two decades. Veterans of the military were 18% of the suicides, even though they're just 8% of the population. Also, the rate of increase was higher among women the past 20 years, but men still take their own lives more than women by 3 to 5 times.
Yeah,
so
women try more, but men complete more.
Right. Men use more lethal means typically than women do.
We take
gun
pills.
Versus pills.
Huh.
Yeah. And there's just more time to save you. More time for you yourself to call the emergency and say, I wish I didn't do this. You know, we know people have interviewed people who survived strangely after a jump off the Golden Gate and say the second they were over, they realized that the only problem in their life that couldn't be solved is that they just jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. People report being regretting it. And if you've just taken pills, you go to the hospital if that happens.
Yeah.
Susan in Piermont, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have great interest in this topic, both as I'm a psychotherapist, but also I lost my best friend to suicide a few years ago. And even with all my psychological knowledge and background, I've always felt very guilty about it. She was depressed for many years. I had talked her out of previous suicidal ideation. But this one time, I had recently lost my mother, and I just was very occupied with that and not paying much attention to what she was going through. And I think there's this huge guilt factor, no matter if it's rational or irrational, about the people left behind. You know, it's just something I've observed in my clients also, that people just carry around, you know, what could I have done?
How do you deal with that for yourself, Susan, and for your clients?
Well, I've, you know, when my clients go through it, I review with them some of the things that happened, and we see that there were attempts made to change that, to respond to them, and there were attempts of compassion often. But sometimes if somebody is really determined to do this, and I think your guest touched on it, you know, when there is a feeling of hopelessness where you just do not feel it will ever get better, that heavy feeling of hopelessness that maybe will be just for a short time, but during that time of hopelessness, the person sees no way out, and if they have the means, they will do something. I agree that there's help. I also, I don't think this has been noted, but there is often with some antidepressant medications, there's often side effects that it will make a person feel just a little bit better, but sometimes give them the energy to actually go and do commit suicide. There is something about side effects of medications. Now, I don't know if the celebrity cases were taking medications or not, but I think that does have to be noted and observed as well.
Thank you for your contribution. Have either of you looked into the relationship? We have another caller who wanted to bring this up, but I don't know if it's statistically, you know, between antidepressants and eventual suicide.
I'll say very quickly that you also have to be careful when you're coming off of them. David Foster Wallace is a case where he was coming off of it, and that's also a very dangerous time. So you have to be careful when you're first trying them and when you're coming off of them.
And you also, it is. She said something very accurate. As your energy starts to increase, if you're still feeling suicidal, you might not have had the energy to do it, and that is a window of risk as a person starts to feel better, believe it or not, that they're more energized to perhaps go through with it.
Mary, before you you go, I don't have demographics from the CDC that break the increase in suicide rates in the country out in this way, but you have this particular pairing of backgrounds. You founded the Samaritans of New York Suicide Prevention Hotline, and you also worked at Rikers and wrote the book Lockdown on Rikers, Shocking Stories of Abuse and Injustice at New York's Notorious Jail. And of course, one of the most famous and infamous suicides in recent history in New York is that of Kalief Browder after his long incarceration and solitary confinement and everything for a tiny little thing that he probably didn't even do. And he later, after he was released, took his own life. Is there any interaction between mass incarceration in this country as it has been in recent decades and the increase in suicide rates?
I couldn't say anything scientifically about that, but it is certainly for the incarcerated, mental health issues are absolutely staggering. Mental health departments are a huge component throughout jails and prisons in this country. So I think that's very telling. After release is also a very tricky time. There is an awful lot of depression around what a person has experienced, as we saw with Kalief Browder, around reentry. People often say that their loved ones are no longer the same person. It is definitely a set of people with a very high incidence of mental health issues, and in particular depression. There's no question.
Jennifer, a last word on anything?
Yeah, just if you're a journalist or you post a lot on Facebook or Twitter, please seek out the CDC guidelines for journalists that came out in the 1990s. We followed them for a while, but the internet really stopped everyone from following it, and I think it's reasonable, as insane as this may sound, to call for people to be responsible. And if you want to be seen as a responsible news service, you don't put the word suicide in the headline. That way, if people are interested in the death, they can click on it. But you don't have to bombard everyone with this word, and you don't have to make it so you find out the methodology without trying to. That should be, I believe people can get information, but you should have to really be trying to get the information. It shouldn't be.
So that's for print. How about for broadcast?
That I'm looking into, because I realize this is new territory. I know that a woman named Madeline Gould does research on media in terms of both fictional stories and non-fictional stories. She does that work up at Columbia, and she'd be the person to look into.
Jennifer Michael Hecht is author of the book Stay, A History of Suicide and the Philosophies Against It. And Mary Buser, co-founder of the Samaritans of New York Suicide Prevention Hotline. And she is author of Lockdown on Rikers, Shocking Stories of Abuse and Injustice at New York's Notorious Jail. Thank you both very much for this difficult conversation.
Yes, thank you for having
me. Good to talk.
And again, for anybody who needs it, the Samaritans of New York suicide prevention hotline number is 212-673-3000, 212-673-3000. The National Suicide Prevention Hotline is 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-8255.